In the NBA, Cleveland Cavaliers star Donovan Mitchell has agreed to a four-year, $273 million extension.
Fox Sports Update on the Right Choice, KPRL, brought to you by Deeds Bar and Grill at the Paso Robles Golf Club. Great food, great view, great people. Prime Rib Monday, Taco Tuesday, specials on wine, and dinner specials Thursday through Saturday. Today in Farming on KPRL is brought to you by Paso Robles Glass, established in 1947, always up on the latest technology and training. They do windows right. Call Paso Robles Glass, 805-238-4014.
From the Ag Information Network, I'm Bob Larson with your agribusiness update. Well, an unusually early California stone fruit harvest is expected to reduce supplies of organic peaches, nectarines, and plums later this summer, creating a tighter market in August. California growers began harvesting organic stone fruit weeks ahead of normal after favorable spring weather accelerated crop development. The rapid pace has compressed the season and is expected to leave fewer volumes available in August. Despite the smaller fruit sizes, growers report excellent eating quality. Well, American Ag Groups reacted to the U.S., Mexico, and Canada launching the first joint review of the USMCA. U.S. Dairy Export Council Vice President Shauna Morris says getting USMCA right matters enormously to our industry, which ships more than 40% of U.S. dairy exports to Canada and Mexico. The agreement is also vital for U.S. pork exports. The Trump administration decided to not approve renewal of the agreement in its current state. Well, family farmers received just 11.8 cents of every dollar consumers spend on food, according to an updated National Farmers Union report. The report tracks the farmer's share of popular cookout foods and highlights the growing gap between grocery store prices and what producers earn. NFU says the figures come as farm finances remain under pressure, with bankruptcies rising 46% from 2024 to 25, record farm debt, and continued high input costs for producers.
You've probably been told that to reach a millennial farmer, you have to go digital. Facebook, Vimeo, YouTube, Instagram, Pinterest, LinkedIn, an online publication, or maybe a podcast. But which one? Oh, and how receptive is this age group to your sales pitch during non-work social time? Maybe the best place to reach a farmer with a farming solution message is when they are, well, quite frankly, farming. You know, it's easy for us to find them during the day, as most farmers are behind the wheel of a pickup truck or farm equipment with the radio on, listening to this station for the Ag Information Network of the West News. If you'd like to deliver information about your terrific product or service, give us a call and we'll connect you directly with our community of loyal farmer listeners. Reach real farmers right here, right now, as they listen to what is important to their farm operation. They trust us, they'll trust you.
From the Ag Information Network, I'm Bob Larson with today's Agribusiness Update.
Today in Farming on KPRL is brought to you by Paso Robles Glass, established in 1947, always up on the latest technology and training. They do windows right. Call Paso Robles Glass, 805-238-4014.
This Fox Business News Update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Lauren Simonetti, and this is the Fox Business Report.
The major averages are losing steam in afternoon trading. AI jitters are slamming semiconductors and memory chip makers following a sell-off of Samsung Electronics stock. The South Korean memory chip maker forecast a huge surge in profit. However, concerns about its AI spending plans and future demand are spooking investors. And Amazon plans to sell at least $25 billion in U.S. dollar bonds just 4 months after it issued $37 billion in the U.S. market. Amazon is part of a cohort of tech giants that have been tapping the bond market for AI spending. And Walmart shares are up 1% after the country's biggest retailer, along with its Sam's Club, said it was lowering prices on thousands of items this summer. Walmart said it's slashing prices to help consumers. President Trump said it was in response to a request from the administration. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
My name is Whitney Allen, and I'm a widow. My husband Ryan died. We never thought we'd ever have to use life insurance, but the unexpected happened. With Ethos, signing up was fast and 100% online. You can get a quote in seconds, apply in minutes, and get same-day coverage. No medical exams, and you can get up to $3 million worth of coverage. I'm grateful we were prepared.
Get your free quote at ethos.com/term. That's ethos.com/term. Paid spokesperson. Time spent on application may vary. Online health questions required.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
American Legends, next on KPRL. Brought to you by Davis Body Shop.
Across the country, inventors are coming up with new ways to harness renewable energy sources. And some of the most influential of them want Uncle Sam to stay out. I'll be right back.
Reagan, in his own voice, is brought to you by K-Brush Concrete, serving the entire Central Coast for more than a decade. Call Kevin at K-Brush Concrete, 423-4033.
The Arab oil embargo of 1973 produced a lot of effects on America, and one of the beneficial ones was a great upsurge in creative research and development of alternative energy sources. Chief among these have been, of course, solar and wind energy. Naturally, there have been voices raised in Congress for Uncle Sam to spend more and more money on developing these new energy sources. But now some of the most respected voices in the alternative energy field are discrediting the arguments for ever-increasing government subsidies. Tom Bender is one such person. He was a leader in the creation of the National Center for Appropriate Technology, funded by the Federal Community Services Agency. But he has become a sharp critic of that organization and the federal funding approach in general. Bender says that government funding for alternative technology is probably not necessary, mainly because so much progress is being made without it. There's a growing awareness, he says, that our problems must largely be resolved by local responsibility and action, and that government money is not free dollars, but only our own hard work and taxes, diluted 5-1 with bureaucratic red tape and control. We always get the best results with our own money, he adds, because we're more careful with it. Local money is second best, and federal money the most dangerous. Another leading figure in solar energy development, Steve Baer, is even more critical. Baer says that President Carter is silly to hand out so much rhetoric about a national energy policy. Baer says there shouldn't be any national energy policy because no one has the wisdom to make one. We do not need a Department of Energy, he declares. We do not need laws governing everything from the car you drive to the windows in your house. Foolish people will waste their money on inefficient cars and badly built houses. Isn't that their business? Leave people alone with enough wealth after they pay their taxes, and they will invent, develop, trade with each other, and do a good job of solving their own problems, says Baer. It's a great shame that the so-called energy crisis is being used by politicians to increase taxes and laws, thereby taking away liberties Americans have previously enjoyed. Behind every gentleman working on government research stand the police. I don't think the founders of our country had this relationship in mind. Unquote from solar energy leader Steve Baer. These solar pioneers are right on target. After we've heard so much romantic rhetoric about alternative energy sources, this kind of realism is refreshing, isn't it? This is Ronald Reagan. Thanks for listening.
Reagan, in his own voice, brought to you by K-Brush Concrete. Anything to do with concrete, from a 5x5 walkway to a 500,000 square foot foundation. Call 423-4033.
Pretend
Protecting What Matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL, 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
It's Tuesday. It's 1230. The bear is in the building. It's time for Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, our history, community, local treasures, institutions that are notable and worth preserving. Today, we've got some good guests. I'm waiting for our first guest to call in, so we're going to take a minute, though. His name is, we have a nuclear physicist coming on from 1230 to 1. His name is James, hopefully. His name is James Walker, and he is the CEO of a company called Nano Nuclear Energy, Inc. We're going to talk about why next-generation micro-reactors may be the answer to creating carbon-free baseload energy. We're going to talk about the components of NanoNuclear's vertically integrated energy supply chain and progress and next steps in deploying the first micro reactors in the United States. And again, hopefully James will be calling in here shortly and we'll be talking to him. It's a fascinating topic, and I'll tell you how it came my way. From 1 o'clock to 2, we have our old friend Greg Haskin, Executive Director of CoLab, the Coalition of Labor, Agriculture, and Business. We're going to chat about more nonsense and lawsuits that are coming our county's way over the Oceano Dunes. Will this story ever go away? We're going to spend some time unpacking Measure H, the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments sales tax increase initiative that you're going to have an opportunity to vote on November 3rd, and other SLO County issues and news to watch as we enjoy the Mid-State Fair and the summer. You can call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So this is an interesting topic, and I guess what really, that I'm hoping that James is going to be calling in on, and if he doesn't, we're going to shift gears and talk about how you felt our 250th country's 250th anniversary birthday went. But interestingly, I was contacted by James' company, his public relations shop, wanting to have to talk about their company. It's a four-year-old company, Nano Nuclear Energy, and they're building nuclear reactors, micro nuclear reactors. And it's an interesting topic, and I don't know if any of you got a chance to watch the movie, Hail Mary. I didn't see the movie, but I actually read the book. And what really piqued my interest is that NanoNuclear is actually starting to develop nuclear reactors that could go on spaceships and on the moon and Mars to be able to power up the stuff that's out there. So it's an interesting topic. They've got it, and I've said that too many times already. They've got an amazing board of directors, advisors, really, which includes a former Secretary of Energy, Rick Perry. He's also former governor of Texas, retired four-star general, Wesley Clark, and a whole bunch of former military. There's James calling in right now.
Okay.
James, welcome to Protecting What Matters. I was starting to get worried about you, James.
Well, me too. I was have difficulty, so like I'm beginning to panic myself.
Well, you know, you know how to build nuclear reactors, and that's all that counts for this show today. So,
okay, good. I can do that.
Yes. So we are live and on air, and so we're just going to roll with the topics here. Okay. Welcome to Protecting What Matters. I was telling the audience a little bit about how we connected through your public relations arm, and the fact that one of the things I didn't tell you about when we talked last week was I actually just finished reading the book Hail Mary, which was what the movie was based on. And while they weren't using nuclear reactors in the book, it was all about interstellar travel and how the challenges of the physics of the whole thing. So I'm really looking forward to you talking about what you're doing in the space program. But tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and nanonuclear energy.
Great. No, very happy. So I'm James Walker. I'm the CEO of Nanonuclear Energy. My background was as a nuclear physicist. I started on submarine systems and primary and secondary systems of those reactors. And then I got sent on a nuclear physics master's, and then I got to Rolls-Royce, where I worked on the design of the next generation of reactors. And then I got promoted out of that role into managing reactor core manufacturing facilities and nuclear fuel reclamation plants. And then when I was moved to North America, I started about 5-6 years ago, initially focused on very small reactor systems, and we've since expanded into reactors to try and power for things like data centers, island communities, oil and gas projects, mining projects, areas like that. And since then, we've taken the company from being strictly a reactor company to being involved in nuclear fuel transportation, nuclear fuel cycle facilities, and even consultancy work.
Hmm. And you actually, you must be on a cell phone because you're breaking up a little bit, but you were also worked for the British Ministry of Defense. What did you do for them?
I did. So when I worked for the Ministry of Defense, they were concentrating on nuclear submarines. And nuclear submarines, as you could probably infer from the name, are all propelled by nuclear propulsion systems. So very small light water reactor systems that are placed inside submarine systems. And my job was principally, at the beginning, mechanical engineering around those systems. And after that, when I got the Ministry of Defense sent me on my master's in nuclear physics, I moved from there into the design of the next generation of nuclear reactors for the next generation of nuclear submarines. So thermal hydraulics, reactor physics, and I was even involved in the construction of rigs that simulated the physical properties of reactor systems, and I monitored those as well. And then I ended up becoming the UK subject matter expert for nuclear fuel reclamation, as well as being the chief engineer on the construction of a chemical plant to recover fuel from old fuel plates for the government as well.
So tell us just real quickly, because obviously our folks are familiar here with nuclear reactors on ships. How are they different on ships than what you're developing with nano?
Oh, well, there's a huge amount of difference. I would say that the principal difference, and this is probably quite an important thing to understand as well, because we get asked, why can't you just simulate a submarine reactor system on land? And, we've been doing it for decades, and surely the tech is already there. But there are some very fundamental differences. So, for instance, when you have a reactor on a submarine or an aircraft carrier like you do in the U.S., those reactors are able to use fuel that would not be available to commercial companies. And the difference there is that the level of enrichment that the military is allowed to possess can be really whatever they want. And typically, the isotope that you're interested in is uranium-235. That is the fissile component that creates the fission chain reaction that creates the energy output. But the military will use sort of 90% plus uranium-235 isotope enrichment, whereas the commercial companies, they're capped. They can only really operate legally up to about 20%. Hmm. And actually, even that 20% is not readily available today. So typically, even those big Homer Simpson reactors that you'll see, as you're driving in your car, those things are using sort of 5%. Uranium-235 levels of enrichment. So, because that's what's currently available with the existing infrastructure. So, I think the fuel is the most fundamental difference, and that dictates a lot of design decisions around what you can utilize, what we as a commercial company can utilize, and what the military can build out.
So just to put this into perspective, I looked up after our conversation last week, I looked up how many gigawatts Diablo Canyon kicks out on a as baseload power, and it looks like based on the research I did that they have two pressurized water reactor units at Diablo Canyon, and each is a bit over 1,100 megawatts of power. So in the prototype, your first prototype, which you're getting, and I want you to talk about that here in a minute, at the University of Indiana that you're going to be setting up, you know, how much power will that generate in relationship to a Diablo Canyon?
So it's completely different. So the idea when you're with something like Diablo Canyon is that you want to get economies of scale through sheer size. Mm-hmm. Because when that kind of reactor is built, it could take 10, 15 years to build. Mm-hmm. And you want it to be able to output as much power as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. And I think even Diablo Canyon, it probably produces something like, I don't know, I can't even remember the statistic now, but is it so like 17 or 16% of like California's
10%, 8 to 10% of the base load power? Yeah,
so that's right. I think it's an even higher percentage of the zero carbon electricity that California outputs.
Yes,
so it's pretty significant just for these two reactor systems.
Right. I'm sorry.
So I was going to say that the reason why the industry shifted away from that model is that because the nuclear industry was not consistently building big light water reactors like Diablo Canyon, a lot of the expertise and learning was not being carried forward to the next project. And so you would, when you finally got around to building a new nuclear power station anywhere in the States, you would run into cost overruns and time delays as a result of, you know, almost having to start over and work these things out. And for that reason, the industry, the private industry, looked at this and said, well, actually, the more strategic way to build our nuclear energy for the future is now that the technology is at a certain level, we make these things much smaller and we modularize them, and then you can mass manufacture the components a lot faster and ship them to site. And if you do that, you can have more of an assembly operation, and then you don't lose all of that learning that you got from projects like Diablo Canyon. And so it's a sort of an industry shift to really take account of the fact that these historic problems would arise from big construction projects like Diablo Canyon.
So your first project, as I mentioned, it sounds like you're getting close to maybe getting a project approved for the University of Indiana, and it's called Kronos MMR. Tell us a little bit about that one.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's not Indiana, it is Illinois.
Illinois, I'm sorry.
It's the same idea. It's going to be built at a university,
right?
But it's going to be a full scale, full power reactor system. And the reason why that's quite interesting is that I think it should be the first net power producing micro reactor to be built in the States.
Hmm.
We should be able to do that. And actually, in the micro reactor race, I think we're the only company in the U.S. at the moment that have filed for a construction permit application with the NRC. That's the federal nuclear regulator in the U.S. to build one of these things. So we can objectively say we're in the lead in the race to produce the U.S.'s first commercial microreactor system. But the reason why this is also important is that this is a step change in technology. And it's important to demonstrate to the market that these things are going to be built and they can function very properly. And even more importantly, because they are a different tech, they can be built in areas where they've never been built before. Like the University of Illinois project, that reactor is going to be built in the middle of a campus surrounded by dorm rooms. The previous technology, that would not have been permissible at all. And the reason why is that the new tech, because of the way the fuel is configured, cannot melt down. So, you know, if you've got a Three Mile Island or a Fukushima, which people might be familiar with, you know, you've got a reactor melt. Now, no one dies in those sort of circumstances, but the reactor can release radioactive activity, and that could give surrounding people dose rates. But that possibility is just not possible with the new tech. The fuel can never reach a temperature at which it can melt and have a catastrophic incident. So you can now co-locate these modern reactors anywhere you want, press right up against you know, the customers that they're serving. And so that's, I think that's an important aspect of this project, is it's completely permissible by the federal regulator because of the safety profile of the reactor system. It just cannot deliver that dose rate. And to put it into further perspective, we were doing an evaluation for a project for a big tech company, and I think the project was 840 megawatt electric, and that meant something like 40 small reactor systems to be installed. And in one scenario, we broke every single reactor in the worst way possible, and just as a theoretical exercise. And the dose rate delivered to somebody just standing next to all of those reactor systems as they simultaneously broke in the worst way imaginable was the same dose rate as eating a banana. that's the risk, you know, just bananas, you know, is how you can think about sort of the risk profile of these new generation of reactor systems.
Do you have the same issues with disposal of the nuclear fuel after it's spent that you have with the big reactors?
So it's very different because the way the fuel is now configured, and this is how most small modular reactor companies and micro reactors are building their fuels, is that the fuel is pelletized, and it's basically put into pelletized form, and then it's coated with the TRISO fuel, which is an isotropic structure that captures all of the fission products. So effectively, the fuel has captured everything. So when the pellets that surround the fuel capture everything. So all of the fission products that you would typically have to deal with in a large reactor system are contained within that fuel matrix.
Mm-hmm.
So effectively, now you don't have a big decommissioning exercise, and the refueling is very simple. It's really fuel out and fuel in. And one thing, you know, Nano has done, our company has done, is that we went out and we acquired fuel transportation companies that have moved, you know, much more hazardous waste in the past,
mm-hmm.
Across many different industries. So we have that internal capability to come in and move that fuel. And effectively, you know, the interesting thing about the people get wrong about waste is that it's technically wrong to even call it waste. And the reason why is that when you, any reactor, even the big Diablo Canyon reactor systems, now when you have that fuel and it's spent, most of the fuel actually in those fuel rods or fuel plates or whatever it is mostly unused. Like your burn up of actual useful fuel is only like 5%.
Wow.
And it stops being functional because of the fission product buildup in the rods or whatever. So I think what the U.S. is looking to do now is that fuel that has been put into storage in the past, like interim storage facilities or long-term waste storage facilities, is that fuel could be taken out and reprocessed and power the U.S. for hundreds of years. So even waste really should be referred to as spent fuel, and we could go get out enormous quantities of uranium in the future if we learn how to reprocess it within the NRC guidelines properly.
That's fascinating.
But, yeah.
Yeah, well, again, that's the big knock on the big reactors, is that they have no place to. California says they won't do it. They don't have a place to get rid of the waste, and it's really a canard. I mean, in many regards.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, it is. Like, for instance, it's not really waste. Like, eventually, that fuel will be reprocessed, and you know, the half life of uranium-235 is still quite long.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to sit there as long as you need it to until you're ready to reprocess it. And then, you know, already in storage, all of that waste, really, you know, really spent fuel, is, you know, there's hundreds of years of power for the U.S. just sitting there that can be utilized.
Okay, so real quickly, because we've got a few minutes, about 30 seconds left, you also have in this segment, and then I'm going to put you on hold when we hear the bumper music, and I'll bring you back on after when we get out of commercial. But you've got a reactor called Zeus, which goes on a truck, so you can truck it around to places in need, right? And then you're working on something for space. When we come back, I hear a bumper music now, so when we come back, I'd like you to just talk a little bit about Zeus and Loki, okay? Hopefully I pronounced that right. And then also what you're doing as far as vertical integration for all the levels that you need. So stand by, and we'll be back in about 2 minutes. I'm going to put you on hold, so don't go away. And folks, we'll be back and we'll be talking some more with James Walker of Nano Nuclear Energy.
I'm not usually a reviewer, but I had an amazing experience at Davis Body Shop. From start to finish, the experience was ideal. Everyone was friendly, helpful, and professional. They kept me updated, did quality work, and had me in and out. No hassles, and returned my vehicle to me in perfect condition.
If you ever have an accident and need to repair your car, you could do what Ann did from Paso Robles. She took her car to Davis Body Shop. And Peggy from Atascadero said,
our family needed repairs to one of our cars, and friends had recommended Davis Body Shop. We were very pleased with their helpfulness, their attention to detail that was provided to us. They explained the process and kept us updated as repairs were made. They also assisted us in securing a rental car. I would definitely recommend them to anyone who needs repairs to a car.
Davis Body Shop is the area's largest auto body collision specialist on El Camino Real at Atascadero and on Theater Drive at Paso Chevrolet.
I've got deals on latex beds. I've got deals on memory foam beds.
We're talking to Rich London, the mattress specialist.
I've got beds with springs, hybrids, where they got springs and memory foam, or springs and latex, or some with even springs, latex, and memory foam. I've got them all.
Big savings now on mattresses of all shapes and sizes at the Mattress Specialist at 13th and Riverside in Paso Robles.
Mid-State Precious Metals is open Tuesday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. in Atascadero, across from the movie theater. If you're looking for an appraisal or quote on your gold or silver, go see Ron at Mid-State Precious Metals for a free quote. With gold and silver at an all-time high, this is the time. They are one of the highest-paying bullion dealers on the West Coast, and they can walk you through the steps to buy and sell with no commitment. Check them out at MidStatePreciousMetals.com or stop by anytime in Atascadero, Tuesday through Friday.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with nuclear physicist James Walker, CEO of Nano Nuclear Energy. You can call or text with questions, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So James, real quickly, you're coming up on hopefully an approval to get Kronos working at the University of Illinois. What's that timeline look like?
So we've just submitted a construction permit application at the end of Q1 this year. And the NRC, the federal regulator, has turned around and said that they estimate that the approval time to get that construction permit will be about a year. So sometime really around mid-year next year, we should have the permission to start pouring concrete, erecting steel, and building it. And really that's going to mean that the reactor will be mostly done by about 2029. And we expect it to be fully operational, full power, and licensed by about 2030. And at that point, that will enable us to sell commercial reactors. And the interesting part there, too, is that after that 2030 timeline, the way the NRC has structured this is that the first reactor gets licensed and all the subsequent reactors after that are licensed, provided they keep to that spec, then that will allow for fleet deployment. So many reactors to be deployed to many different locations.
So tell us pretty quickly about Zeus and Loki. What are the applications for those?
So Loki is almost like a shrunk down Kronos. It's a high temperature gas reactor. It utilizes TRISO fuel. But the thing that you touched on it a little bit at the start here when you were talking about you read Project Hail Mary recently. Mm-hmm. We saw the movie. We don't have. Oh, what was the, I can't remember the name of the bacteria in the book that powered ships.
I can't.
We don't have that yet.
I can't remember either. That's how much I enjoy. I like the book. I just can't remember that stuff after I read it.
Me too. I also read it, and I've forgotten as well. So I can. But we don't have those. That miracle technology yet. But we do have nuclear power. And the interesting thing is that there really is no space exploration without nuclear. And I that's for many different reasons. So chemical rockets are wonderful to get you into space. I think that you can keep making those more efficient and Musk and NASA and, you know, Jeff Bezos will continue doing that. But imagine you do have a moon colony or something like that. Now, you can't use wind up there. You certainly can't use hydro or geothermal, but you also can't use gas or coal or oil, because you would need to transport enormous amounts that it's just not energy dense enough that justifies the economics. And even solar, you can't use in space in somewhere like the moon, because the lunar night cycle is like 2 weeks, so it's going to be dark for 2 weeks at a time. And so you're going to be in this position where the only thing you're going to actually have available to you for consistent baseload power to keep people alive is a nuclear reactor. And so the low-key system that we're working on is that system. It's designed to be a baseload power system that can be deployed to somewhere like the moon or Mars and provide long-term power for space exploration and space colonies. And that's the direction that everyone wants to go in at the moment, because you will need sort of a long-term deployment site if you're really serious about getting deeper into space. And how that could even look is that there could be launch pads on somewhere like the moon or Mars in the future. But even then, they would need consistent output of nuclear power to be able to deliver the power necessary to support and sustain those systems. And nuclear goes even further than that. Eventually, you're going to, if you want to go deep into space, the chemical rockets won't get you very far. You're going to need much more densely packed energy in the form of something like uranium to get that long-term thermal propulsion. So you're going to have to switch over from chemical rockets once you're in orbit over to some sort of nuclear device to provide that thermal output, and then you can consistently keep producing power as you go deeper into space, which is, you know, how even the Voyager spacecraft, which I think is the furthest deployed ever man-made craft, they were using just a radioisotope, like a plutonium-based radioisotope, to get that consistent ability to provide power over decades and decades and decades, and you just can't do that with anything else.
It's fascinating, and Zeus is a reactor that you can actually truck it around and take it to places, right?
Yes. So the idea with Zeus as well, again, it's catering towards a different market, and this is why nuclear is getting quite exciting. Is that we basically made it a thermal conduction system. So we removed all the coolant out of Zeus, and what that allows for is that you now have a system that is the most simple you could possibly make a reactor. So, you know, uranium gets hot and it thermally conducts through a solid matrix like, you know, graphite or something like that to an inert gas like helium that removes it to a turbine. It's as simple as you could possibly make a reactor system. But the advantage there is that you could then use it for all sorts of deployments. Like, for instance, warfare has changed enormously, just to give, you know, a completely different example. Like, I think the Ukraine war has really highlighted how it's become very drone focused. But then your challenge becomes, if you have an advancing line, how you keep maintaining a consistent level of power. Because if you need to truck in diesel continuously to provide this power to power drones, or you need some much more consistent output that can move very quickly, and then you don't have logistical considerations because your power is centralized and located. Something like Zeus could be a really interesting application for the military to sustain those kind of the drone operations. Now, that's a bit of a morbid one, but that gives you an idea of, you know, of how the reactor could be utilized for forward deployments. But again, mining projects, remote communities, you know, much more positive things that it could be utilized for, where power is very difficult to get hold of. And certainly northern Canada, it has enormous logistical challenges from some of these northern communities that are very far separated from, you know, mainline grid systems, from cities. And all of their power is currently brought in by remote diesel. It's very expensive, very logistically difficult, and you can't access human capital anymore, because you can't build remote industry, because everything needs to be imported now if you're going to be relying on that kind of imported diesel model.
James, real quickly, we're coming up on the top of the hour break. How's the best way for people to learn more about nano nuclear energy, and what is you're traded on the NASDAQ, what's your symbol?
So we're traded on the NASDAQ. Our symbol is NNE. You can find more about us on our website, nanonuclearenergy.com. But we're on all the socials as well, Instagram and Twitter and whatever, you know, all that kind of thing. Please go and find us out and sign up to our mailing list, because we've got a lot of interesting news and developments coming out.
Sounds great. Yes, and I will have you back on maybe for a whole hour, because you got so much to share with people and so much knowledge. It would be great. Thank you so much for coming on.
No worries. Thank you very much for having me.
You take care. Folks, we'll be back in a few minutes.
Join us next Tuesday for Protect What Matters the Most with Barry Fisher. Send your questions and show topic ideas to barry@blazinbear.com. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.